Today I'm in Hartford with Peter Ruffles, who used to be a teacher at my secondary school at the Broxbourne School. More years ago than we want to discuss. So I guess that probably or may not answer the first question, which is where did we first meet?
Well, I think it does, doesn't it? I may have been introduced to you, sometimes it happened, by a brother or other. At the, you know, if you'd come to a school fete or something, but I don't remember that, but it would have been in the school corridors, wouldn't it? And I would have known who you were because you had antecedents or precedents.
I'm just going to ask you a question, though. Were you at school already when they did the Caucasian chalk circle?
Yes.
I was Michael.
I would never have recalled that on my own.
I remembered now.
Yes, and I do now when this is what happens. I can get things quite well, but I don't actually draw them up for myself, which is a bit odd. This is an advancing years thing.
I only just remembered. Yeah. So I think I was probably 3 or 4, and they didn't do any rehearsals because they thought I'd be over-rehearsed.
Yes.
And they wanted me to very nicely be pushed onto stage in a realistic way.
Yeah.
And the first night it was fine, and I was shocked and dazed, and the second night it was okay and I was still a bit shocked and dazed, but apparently on the third night I walked in and put my arms up. I don't know if you remember that, but my mum says that I just walked onto stage and
there I was. You did it. So do you actually remember anything at all of that, or are your memories from what you have seen in printing?
I think I have a vague memory of sitting in the wings and being told to be quiet, and that kind of, and the smell of those particular steps. I don't know if I went back there if they still smell the same, but there is that. Those steps on the side of the stage.
Yeah.
I think it must have been on stage left.
Yes.
That's the vagueness of it.
They were good years, and a Broxbourne school. The quality years, because they were all highly developmental years for the school at that point, because we'd gone from a grammar school and into a comprehensive school by joining with the Basin Hill Secondary School, where I was at the time beforehand. So, and it was the first in Hertfordshire, that arrangement, and so a lot depended on it. So highly charged people.
The next question is, do you drink tea?
I do, habitually. It's the standard thing.
And what's your favourite sort of tea?
The only sort of tea I buy, and I buy a lot of it, is Co-op 99. Will you frown at this?
No.
It's fair trade. It is fair trade, Janet. So.
A lot of people have been talking about Yorkshire tea, and I've been going, yes, lots of people say that, without pointing out that I don't think it's fair trade. So
yes.
I'm happier. Yeah, it's fair trade.
Well, yes. But it's easy. I spend quite a bit of time in the Benjo Working Men's Club. I'm the president, so my family say I'm doing duty drinking, and it's true. I do need to be seen there in order. And next door is the Co-op, so once I'm up there, I do my shopping, so it's convenient, but it's also the taste of tea that I like.
If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
Does it have to be achievable?
No, it doesn't have to be achievable. It could be an aspirational thing.
This is an aspirational thing. What fascinates me about society generally is the size of the units that makes a cohesive community, any kind or another. And Church of England parishes got it right so many years ago. So what would I have to do? Fund the church commissioners in an enormously generous way and put a parish priest in every parish separately. I wouldn't mind if that parish priest did other things, like, you know, writing things, or even working in the factory next door part-time. But I would have one priest in each place, each parish as a place, because I think that unit works. It works when it's tiny and rural, I don't know how well your congregations go from church to church and worship as one, but by and large here, Little Hawmead and Great Hawmead are two separate places sharing a priest with six other parishes.
Mine aren't great travellers. How do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Yes, I read that.
Shall I tell you where the quote comes from? It's from a Daily Telegraph article in 2014, and I read it and I didn't know what I thought about it, which is why it became the focus of this project.
I would pull it apart because and examine the word sleeping, and it's not, I think, as it's quite intended, because sleep for me is recreational, it's a beautiful thing, and but should a church, a mission, as it were, ever take time out? Probably not. So I don't like the sleeping bit because it doesn't help me understand, I think, the meaning of the quote, and I don't think the church has a right to sleep. I don't think it would be beneficial. Dying is a different matter, and I certainly don't think the Church of England is dying. My guess is it has reduced in size, in numerical terms, but I don't know that people have lost the awareness of their own need for the spiritual side of things, and that puts me comfortably in a highish church bracket, because that's I like my poetry, I like my symbolisms, and I like in the church, I suppose I like a high church because of the language, but that language is shared pretty broadly, and I like the high church because of the formalities and the routines. And I think that's really what people knowingly or unknowingly are looking for in our nation, and it should still be providable for them by the church, which is routine, familiarity with the language. As a teacher, I was out of favour nearly all of my teaching life with my colleagues, because I wanted people to do quite a bit of rote learning, because I think that matters. So in Church of England ministry terms, I don't think it matters much that people are going through things they don't understand, and having familiar language on the tip of their tongues for a large part of their lives. Now, this is not a popular thing to say, but if those words are there at certain points in certain people's lives, because those points come at different phases, different times for individuals, I think people would be safer and more secure in themselves as individuals, and their awareness of God, a God, I would probably have to say, makes them safer in this world.
It's very interesting that one of the things which I did when I started looking after this new parish, so I was part-time for a bit, and then I got care of another parish, and when I arrived I was their fifth vicar in 10 years. So they weren't in a good place. And I said to them, what we're going to do, the radical thing we're going to do to start with, the very first thing we're going to do, is start a midweek Book of Common Prayer communion service. And they were like, what is this mad vicar doing? But it provided a place of anchor for the community during the week. We use a very standard Book of Common Prayer. We have the sermon in very slightly the wrong place. but it's only about only the other side of the creed.
Yes.
But it's Book of Common Prayer language, and there's a short homily, and it's a half-hour service, and then after the service we have tea and coffee and a chat and continue to discuss the theology of whatever I've tried to grab together for the sermon. And that little group of people provides a little core and an accessible place. And so even people who aren't familiar with the language, it's not necessarily about the words. It's, you know, when they say in advertising, it's only 10 or 15% is actually about the words that you use, but the rest is about everything else.
Yeah.
And so there's that which goes with that, which I think is important.
We would say something similar. Certainly our growth service happens to be midweek communion, biggest growth.
And is that common prayer or a traditional order or something?
Well, it's a bit of a hybrid, but it isn't. It's not common prayer, but it's got those things that you described, a brevity. Because I think that is quite important. Most things are 20 minutes too long, whatever it is, even a classical concert. For many, we're conditioned to accepting less than our predecessors and expecting less. I think that's part of it. But the simple repetition and the security of knowing... occasionally we have a preacher who suddenly says, right, you just have 1.5 minutes now to turn to your neighbour and chat about friendship, which was last Sunday. I find that extremely difficult, and so do a lot of other people, because hopefully you're sitting next to a strange person, you've done other kinds of friendly things, and suddenly your relationship by somebody else's instruction from on high in the pulpit isn't helped. They think it is, but it isn't.
I think personality type and church attendance are actually pretty tightly linked, and so the people that are happy doing that may well be at a different type of service.
In a town church we have an array of different types of services.
That's something I've learnt, because years ago I would have made people do that as well, but now I understand people much better after however many years in ministry. And I think we need to be really cautious about imposing sharing on any level, and that's really important. So next question is about teaching. So do you observe a change in the influence of Christianity on your pupils between when you started teaching, which I don't actually know the date, and when you retired, which I also don't actually know the date?
Yeah, well, I did my gap year teaching in 1960.
My goodness, that's a long
time
ago.
And then that was at Richard Hale. So I was actually teaching. Then I taught 4 years while I was at college training. I came back to Richard Hale 2 half-days a week, and was paid, which was rather nice for a student. Good stuff. And then at Broxbourne it was 63 when I turned up. And then... we were singing our morning assembly hymn. One of the big tasks for creepy kids was to be hymn book monitor. We had that corporate worship together. We all groaned about it, teachers and pupils. But I think it gave... And, of course, it came out... In the secondary modern school, it came out of the public school hymn book... course, which has always struck me as a great irony, working in this rough school. And of course the covers of nearly all of them were defaced, so it became not the public school hymn book but the pub hymn book, which they thought was enormously funny. So we had the ritual, and in later years John Milner had arrived, and he would be at the piano and finding it the biggest challenge of his week, and in the end we stopped singing out. So there was that pattern, but it does reinforce the formality. School assemblies continued at Broxbourne until I retired. I don't know whether they still do, and that was in the year 2000. to be very formal affairs. Take the religion or faith or Christianity out of it. No one spoke from the moment they came into the upper school or lower school hall, and they didn't speak until they were out through those curtains and gone. And I used to tell children who objected to this that, in my view, it was good for them. You know, they could actually sit there and contemplate and recall why they got up in the morning, what they're going to do. It's that moment of stillness, really. If they turned off and listened to nothing, it was a beneficial period.
The next specialist question is, what would you like to be remembered for?
I think I was born to teach, but I think what I will be remembered for, probably because remember the last bit, that is the community stuff. You know, I'm an alderman of the county council, because I did 16 years and and was vice chairman. So that's what that kind of stuff is what. Unless you look at Facebook, and on Facebook, nearly all my, I think it's 2,000 followers are former pupils. So there, I get a lot of, you know, do you remember in 1972 we did so and so? But I would want to be remembered as a, you know, I suppose it would be nice to be thought of as a good practitioner teaching in the classroom. Probably won't happen.
What's your favourite thing beginning with T?
Oh, yeah. Well, sentimental, but it's and quite inappropriate, so I must prepare you for this. It's talisman. And you'd say, what? This sounds like magic and all that kind of thing. And it is, but I think there's also a link with consecration, the word consecration. I meant to look it up beforehand. Anyway, it's not for the reasons of the meaning, but a passion I've had all my life, literally from the age of 8 onwards, is rose growing. I love my roses. And I have a garden with many roses, which are not obtainable now. One of the favourites is Talisman. And it's called, it was 19, the era that I like best is the sort of 1910 to 1950 period of rose growing. It's all a commercial thing, really. Roses come in and they're superseded by a stronger growing variety and usually more disease resistant, and so old ones fade away and nurseries don't produce them. It's all to do with sales and the naming matters. Now we have things like Yellow Pages because it was sponsored by the Yellow Pages, that kind of thing. My period has nice names like Lady Waterlow or Lady Hillingdon or Mrs. Herbert Stevens, and you know, feminine names usually, not always. But Talisman is one. There's a bush in my garden which has been there longer than I've lived in the house, which is 75 years.
Gosh.
And it's almost always the first to bloom. It is very old. Climbers live a little bit longer. This is an ordinary bush, and it's out now, and most others aren't. And I just absolutely adore, passionately adore, the rose. So that my family will know what to put on the coffin. Shall I tell you just quickly about it? 1932, raised in America, and it, called Talisman, I suppose, because it does have a jewel-like sort of thing. And it's red and yellow suffused into... and so you look into it, all sorts of colours and shapes. Beating.
That sounds
so
lovely.
So I'll settle for a tea. That wasn't a very intellectual answer to a non-intellectual question.
So I need to say thank you very much for seeing me today.
Oh, well, it's been a very, very great pleasure, and I should boast about it.